Angharad by Strychnine. Read by Calicuria. Fandom, Mad Max Fury Road. Pairing, Angharad Capable. Warning for self-harm. Angharad picks up threads from other girls. The vault is empty when she comes to the Citadel, but there are things in the shadows, like bones picked clean, like secrets that aren't really secrets, like the words scratched into Miss Giddy's skin. She finds a bundle of papers first, tied with twine and hidden in a hollow in the wall, carved out and covered up. It tells the story of a girl named Min, who was a wife, who bore a daughter that she never saw again. It tells the story of Immortan Joe, who was a monster. The last scrap of paper has an inked thumbprint on one corner. I will have no more babies. I will not be here long. He killed the world. Nothing can grow here. He killed the world, murmurs Angharad to herself, rolling the words over her tongue, clattering them against her teeth. Nothing can grow here.
You'll do good to keep your tongue bit, Miss Giddy tells her, because she hears everything in the vault, and she knew the girl on the paper.
What happened to Min? Angharad asks, though she's sure she knows the answer.
Min had her shot, and she knew what would happen, says Miss Giddy, her eyes betraying nothing.
Now don't speak her name again. The Morton can get what he wants from you, even if you got no tongue.
So Angharad keeps silent. She finds the doll next, a ragged thing with blacked-out eyes and a belly painted red and cut wide open. There's a stone resting inside, and it is dressed in dirty white, twin to the shrouds Joe gives her. Angharad sits it on her bed for a night, and then cracks the glass in one of the windows and throws it down 1,000 miles to the dust. She does not like to be tricked into seeing herself in plastic things. A person is not a doll, she decides, not even when they are treated like one. The third thing comes with Capable. It's friendship and love, things Angharad has not felt since she was ragged and small and tangled up with other wretched children, playing games in dust. She winds her fingers up in Capable's hair, and she drapes her arm around her shoulders, and they touch for the miracle of touching. Nothing can grow here, she tells Capable later. He killed the world.
Not him, says Capable, shaking her head. It's a sickness more than him.
Then who?
Angharad asks.
Then who?
Capable sighs, pressing a hand to her forehead.
Keep your tongues,
Miss Giddy warns, because she hears everything in the vault. There are other girls, then, as precious as Capable, and as trapped, and as wounded. Angharad loves them all fiercely, and she thinks that none of them are dolls, none of them are plastic girls with stones in their bellies. None of them are things. The thought sets a monster growing in her heart, and she thinks that if she could free it, she could save them all. It is raw like gravel, and it burns like sand, and it's as cold as steel, and she tries to dig it out with a needle taken from Miss Giddy. She scores a cage of blood into her cheek and forehead, and she scratches ladders into her arm, and her blood sings with freedom, and her skin shivers. This is a violence she can control. This is a monster that she holds on a leash. When Furiosa tells him of the green place, the monster under Angharad's ribs whispers yes. Angharad runs her fingers over the cracks and ridges of her face. Angharad winds her fingers into Capable's hair. Angharad thinks of paper and of dolls.
We are not things, she tells Miss Giddy,
because Miss Giddy will hear it, even if she isn't the first to be told. The old woman stills and tilts her head like a bird, like a puppet, like a sheet caught on the wind, and then all the air runs out of her, and she leans against Angharad like she would fall without her. No, Miss Giddy agrees quietly. And I suppose you'll keep your tongues, and more besides.
We'll tell everyone, says Angharad. We'll tell them what it's like to be owned by the Citadel.
I believe you will.
Miss Giddy shows her a shotgun, the shells cleaned carefully of sand, the trigger worn smooth. This is another thing, like the dolls, and like the paper, something hidden in the vault by the women who have walked there. Ghosts. Voices on the air. Angharad thinks that when her monster is set loose, nothing in the world will stop it. Not with the weight of all these women behind her. Not with the many monsters ahead.
There's a baby under her ribs, too, curled up with the monster, and Angharad tries hard not to think of it. It is not a stone tucked into the hollow of her belly, and it is not a warlord, but she is not sure what it is.
It doesn't matter, she decides. Only the road matters, and the green place, and her sisters by her side. When they are in the hold, when they finally start to move, Angharad starts to cry and cannot stop. Capable holds her hand. Cheeto stares at her, terrified. She clenches her jaw until it aches, but cannot stop the shudders that tug at her shoulders and twist at her chest. She cannot stop the tears that taste like salt.
I have not cried in 1,000 years, she thinks deliriously, and she jams her hand against her mouth until everything has quieted.
We're going to the green place, she whispers, as the tears dry up on her cheeks.
You don't have to hold us all up,
says Dag, her eyes wide.
We can stand on our own.
Angharad pulls at threads until they fall apart. Angharad has a monster under her ribs. Angharad is full to the brim with love. They are close to the end, she thinks, and when they get there, the relief will be so great that she is not sure she will survive it. But Capable will, and Toast will, and Dag and Cheeto will, and it has always been about them and not about her. She will join Min and 1,000 other girls without names, and together they will light a path and hold out their palms and give their victory to anyone who would claim it. Angharad knows that everything hurts. But together they will find the sort of pain that makes them stronger. The end. Capable by Strychnine. Read by Calicuria. Fandom, Mad Max Fury Road. Warning for self-harm and animal death. When Capable is small, a velvet-soft puppy dies. It is not long from its mother, a pink and naked thing, and there are others that are living, wriggling in the dirt, but Capable cries all the same.
You feel too much,
says the raider who might be Capable's mother.
Things die. This one never lived, and will have meat tonight. Be grateful.
Capable drags a hand across her cheeks, and sniffs hard, just once, and stops crying. She gives the dead thing to another raider, who cuts it up and cooks it into something warm, and when Capable eats it, it's with a scarf wrapped around her head, like if she can't hear it, it isn't happening. Perhaps she does feel too much, she thinks, because death creeps into her mouth, and dies, and dears, until it hums in the air around her like a cloud of mosquitoes. Perhaps she killed the puppy by willing it to live.
When Capable is a little older, the raider dies. It's possible she wasn't her mother, but her hair curled the same, and her eyes cut the same, and she held Capable's hand sometimes. It's a bite from something venomous, but no one sees what. Capable puts her mouth to the swollen wound, and sucks at it until she can taste something bitter on her tongue, and spits on the sand. The woman's eyes are half closed, but they cut through her still, and she is smiling.
"If you catch the thing that did, cut it up for me," she says.
"I'll bite its head off," Capable says quietly, blinking back her tears.
"Good, and don't do it crying."
Capable doesn't say anything to that, but she holds her mother's hand until it goes limp, and then she unwinds the leather belt from around her hips and takes off her clothing, piece by piece, and then wraps her in a wide length of dirty cloth. She digs a hole, deep so nothing more will bite her, and pushes her in and covers her up. And it's dark by the time it's done, and Capable is shivering. She bundles up the clothing and straps it together with the belt and shrugs it over her shoulder, and then she walks doggedly toward the lights of the raider camp in the distance. "You feel too much," she tells herself as she walks, and she drags a hand across her cheeks and sniffs hard, just once, and stops crying. When Capable is a little older still, she is sold to Morton Joe. She no longer has a mother to vouch for her usefulness, and her hair is bright, and her skin is clean, and Morton Joe gives water to the raiders who bring her in. She keeps her eyes on the face of the one who cooked her puppy, a lifetime of desert ago, and she hopes they cut deep.
"You are a lucky thing," Joe tells her. "You will be treasured."
"I feel too much," Capable wants to say, but she clasps her hands in front of her instead, and she bites the inside of her cheek until it's bloody, and smiles at him like he's the whole world and everything in it. The whole world, dead and rotting. "Thank you," she says. Angharad gentles the wound some. Angharad is made of gold. She takes Capable's hand when they are first alone together and presses their palms together and their fingers until they look like they are reflections of one another. "I feel too much," Capable thinks, and her heart beats faster.
"Don't call me splendid," Angharad says.
In the vault, Capable feels a kinship with the walls. They are strong and terrible, and they hold things back and keep things in, and Capable thinks that she is all of that, and silent and hard and eternal. She thinks she might be death itself, wriggling under the skin of everyone born into this world. She thinks she is blood and bone and poison. She tells Angharad this when she asks, and Angharad takes her hand again and kisses her palm and kisses the tips of her fingers and kisses the inside of her wrist. "It's him who is death," she says, very quietly. "You are hope." Capable doesn't reply. She brushes a thumb across the new cuts along Angharad's forehead. She tucks her knees under her chin. Angharad takes that as acceptance, and she rests her head on Capable's shoulder. Their hair tangles together, gold and red, and Capable thinks that if she is the blood of death, then Angharad is the gold of waking life. "You feel too much," she tells herself, and she stills her hands from braiding their hair together. But it is easier after that, to think she might have someone, to think that it might be easy. And then there is Toast, and Dag, and Cheeto, and Capable grows lighter every time they smile. Death cannot belong to one girl,
she thinks, watching Toast make shadow puppets across the wall. Death is not a stillborn puppy or a bitten mother or a girl sold to be a wife. Death is that those things must happen in the burned world they have left. When Capable is not old enough, Angharad falls. The world rattles through Capable's head, and her scream rips at her throat, and her sisters are muddied blurs of color around her. She would throw herself through the open door if Dag and Cheeto weren't in her way. Death can take back death, she thinks feverishly. I feel too much. We're going too fast. We have to go back. We have to go back. When she takes a breath, her vision goes gray at the edges, and she beats her fist against the rig, like it was the vehicle that took Angharad from her. Like it wasn't her fault. Like death wasn't always at the tips of her fingers. When Cheeto runs, she drags a hand across her cheeks and sniffs hard, just once, and runs after her. She must be strong for Cheeto and Dag and Toast. For Angharad. For herself. She will more than likely kill them when the death inside her spills out again. But she can't bring herself to leave. So she is strong instead, to keep it back a little longer. When she finds Nux, she thinks of Angharad. Angharad would yell at this boy and lecture him and let him stay. Capable does not yell. She tells him the truth, and she touches him because he needs touching, and she lets him stay. There are countless lives in the desert, and countless deaths, and war boys in between, and Volvolini with poisoned water, and Max with ghosts in his eyes, and the wretched of a parched earth. Capable will help them, like Angharad wanted to, like Angharad couldn't. Capable will gather up whatever deathless things remain, and she will be their walls, their words, their hope. Just as Angharad had wanted. Gradually, as the citadel grows green around her, she accepts that everyone is touched by death, and that she is not the root of it. She is not death disguised as a girl with blood for hair. Babies are born with her help, and children know letters, and numbers, and words. Toast makes shadow puppets on the walls, and the children scream in delight. Cheeto lives on the flat ground, and rides bikes with the Vivolini, and grows as fierce as she once was fragile. Dag keeps them all alive. Angharad is the gold of waking life. You feel too much, Cheeto tells her one day, when she is laughing at Dag's flowers with tears in her eyes. Yes, she agrees, and she laughs again, and there is death at her edges, and she is content. The end. Toast by Strychnine. Read by Calicuria. Fandom, Mad Max Fury Road. Warning for rape. Toast is standing in front of a man that she is told is her husband. There's a veil over her eyes, and she is dressed in white, a shroud that is draped across her shoulders, her breasts, falling to her calves, unstained and soft, clean cut like nothing is anymore. Her hair, never cut, silken and strong, is unbound. Her mouth tastes metallic. And when she touches it, her hand comes away silver. She does not touch her neck, which hurts badly, scared she will pull away her skin if she does. She does not know where she is. She does not know how she got here. It is a wide cavern of rock, with a pool at one end, green as bottle glass, and a tangled pile of steering wheels at the other. their boys painted white, with hollow eyes, in lines and lines forever. And they are watching her and this gargoyle husband, and her feet feel frozen to the packed earth ground. She was riding Pillion on a bike only a moment ago. She is sure of it. She is going to be allowed to ride on her own soon. A buzzard, decorated in spikes. She was going to cut her hair off, and cut her palm, and be reborn to the road. "I'm in the wrong place," she says, and her voice sounds far away and thick, like she's speaking around sand.
"A bride has been left for me at the gates of Valhalla," says the husband, "shrouded and silvered." "Unspoiled," says another, in a red-stained apron with knives in its pockets. "Intact. May she bear boy children. May she sit beside me in Valhalla. May she ride eternal." "Glory!"
cry the white boys, their voices edged in hysteria.
"Glory!"
spits the one with the knives, wiping a hand across his mouth.
"Glory!"
says the husband, and he turns his red-rimmed eyes to her. "Glory," she whispers, trapped in white and silver. In the vault, Toast comes out of her drugged sleep screaming. There was a girl there, red, and a girl there, gold, and Toast slaps the gold one and kicks the red one and is wrestled to the floor by both. They are dressed in white. There are skull scars on their necks. Her neck burns. They are holding her limbs and breathing heavily. They are just like her, she realizes, and she stops struggling. They let her get to her feet, though the redhead makes sure she's between Toast and the blonde at all times, and her expression is flat and fierce. Toast inspects the vault, and she holds her hands and fists at her sides, and she trips on the white cloth that tangles around her ankles, no longer pristine. The rooms are big, and there are books in piles, and there is water in a pool, and there is green outside the dirty windows. "I'm told I have a husband," she says.
"We all do,"
the blonde laughs, sharp and bitter as acid.
"Through him we're raised up," the redhead mutters.
Toast spits on the floor. They are Angharad and capable, and it takes a long time for Toast to love them. She is the third person in a pair. She was alone even among the buzzards. Miss Giddy makes it easier. She is more interesting than she has any right to be, being so old. She teaches Toast to read, and Toast teaches her to make animal shadows on the walls, and the old woman laughs like the screaming of birds. Toast does not allow herself to miss the buzzards, but she braids her hair down her back on her second night, and she hacks it off with a piece of glass she breaks from one of the small square windows. She cuts her hand, too, and paints the blood down her nose for the road, and across her mouth for the horizon. She wipes it off quickly, when it reminds her too much of the silver from her wedding, but she thinks it counts all the same. Joe hits her when he sees her hair, and she tastes blood again, and she hates him. He visits in the night, and she hates him. He touches the others, and she hates him. The organic mechanic examines them, and she hates him, too. "I could be on a bike," she says one night, lying in the water. "I could be on a bike with spiked wheels. I could be at the horizon in a blink of an eye." "Close your eyes, and you are," says Capable. And she does, and she is. Toast counts bullets in her head. She'd learned at an early age what bullets went in what guns. It's an important thing to know when you're clinging to the back of a buzzard. Passing the wrong bullets could mean their death. And yours. It could be an important thing to know still, she reasons, even locked up as she is. The world still exists outside, and she plans to be a part of it again, even if it takes her 10,000 days. There are other things she learns, like how to tie a slipknot, like the names of stars, like what weeds are poisonous. She learns so quick Miss Giddy calls her knowing, and she takes the name only because it's Miss Giddy who gives it. She thinks if she really were knowing, she'd be out of the vault by now. She'd be at the horizon. Angharad makes plans, and more girls arrive, and she tells them, too. The green place shimmers in all of their minds, a mirage on the desert, an impossible place, but all of them have hope anyway. They are alive. They have one another. They have water. And they have sky.
What's the first thing you'll do when we're out?
Cheeto asks Toast, hands on her chin.
I'm gonna get sunburned till my nose peels, she says,
and Cheeto laughs. When they do leave the vault, Miss Giddy stays behind. Toast takes it hardest of all of them, though she pretends not to. She just cleans the shotgun that's kept hidden in a hollow in the wall, and checks the shells, and checks them again. It won't misfire, she says, her voice far more certain than she is.
I'll kill him, and catch you on the horizon,
Miss Giddy says, and Toast almost believes it. When it is Joe who catches them, she knows Miss Giddy is dead. We're dying, and it hurts. But the green place is a breath of wind away, and she pushes her hurt to the back of her mind. Angharad has got them this far, and Furiosa will get them farther, and Toast will ride the horizon from end to end, just to prove she can, just to stretch her legs, just to feel the breeze. She does not know how Immortan Joe took her, but she will remember every detail of the way she leaves, and she'll write her freedom in the dirt, and she will scream her victory to the sky, and she will share it with every girl trapped in a world that has tried so hard to bury her. She will be sunburned, and she will cut her hair short, and she will bleed if she wants to, and kiss if she wants to, and she will be free. The end. Dag, by Strychnine, read by Calicuria. Fandom, Mad Max Fury Road. Warning for rape. The vault starts gathering books when Rictus is born. Soft minds breed soft children, Miss Giddy says, and the Immortan takes it to heart. By the time Dag is brought in and locked up, there are over 1,000. And she drinks the words in like a flower finding water in dry earth. She marks her favorite passages with the water-thinned oil that Miss Giddy uses for her tattoos, and the books grow bright with her annotations and drawings. She does not read for more knowledge like Toast. She merely reads for the pleasure of reading, for the way the words sound, rattling through her brain, for the way they sound tripping off her tongue, for the pictures they make in her head. There are stranger places than the Citadel in these worlds, and safer, and more beautiful, and less terrifying, and she lives there instead, with her eyes on the page. Cheeto pulls it out of her sometimes, stealing the books and running her fingers lightly over the words that Dag has circled. She's mad, but she's magic, she whispers, pulling on a piece of Dag's hair. Do you only keep the words that are about you?
I keep the ones that are about you, stupid, she says,
and she snatches the book back and closes it carefully and pinches Cheeto's cheek. Dag thinks sometimes, watching Miss Giddy with her crinkled paper skin, that maybe one day she will have read so much that the words will wriggle their way under her skin and fix there, gray and green and ghost-like. Words like photosynthesis, written down the curve of her ribs, or ephemeral, curled up in the crook of her elbow. She thinks she might like to be a girl book, unbreakable and permanent. Angharad thinks the books are a way of keeping them quiet and soft, like food to coax an animal into a trunk. She's probably not wrong, but Dag doesn't care. The words are the only things keeping her from breaking her bones trying to knock the walls down. She's not a good girl in a cage. She prowls the edges of the rooms constantly, reciting poetry in a loud and ringing voice. She spits things at Immortan Joe that she knows he doesn't understand, and he hurts her for it. But she doesn't care about that, either. She's a book, not a body. Miss Giddy gives her her first tattoo, with Cheeto peering over her shoulder. A series of dots under the second knuckle of one finger. These are words, too, because writing her sister's name on her skin would be foolish. He would want only his name so permanently scarred. So she uses a dot for Angharad, and a dot for Toast, and for Capable, and for Cheeto, and Miss Giddy, and Dag herself. A dot for the only things in the world she loves that aren't written on paper. "There wasn't anyone before," Cheeto asks. "Before you were brought here." Dag thinks of a warm hand, holding hers, and a man with blue eyes, and a floor made of woven mats, and a car seat for a bed. She frowns at her hand, pressed flat on the rickety table in the bedroom, and Miss Giddy is waiting, and Cheeto's eyes are wide, and she shakes her head. "I didn't exist until I got in here," she says. "I didn't exist until I found my books."
"You did too," Capable says, walking past them. "Don't make this into somewhere good."
Dag ignores her and shakes out her limbs, stiff from sitting in one place while Miss Giddy prickled her skin. Dag finds a book and opens it and holds her breath.
"We are not things," says Angharad later, and Dag laughs.
"We are not impedimenta," she says, hooking her arm through Toast's and swinging their arms wide. "We are not paraphernalia."
"We are not things," Angharad repeats, frowning.
"No," Dag agrees. "We're not." When Angharad's plans to leave get more and more solid, Dag starts to worry. She bites her fingernails off, and she chews on her hair, and she tugs at the fraying skin on her fingers. Her mouth tastes like blood because she chews on her lips so much. Furiosa will come to them in the early morning, and the many mothers will bundle them up in sacking and fold them into crates like bags of potatoes. There will be little enough room for them, and no room for books.
"Perhaps I'll eat them all," Dag says quietly. "It's no one in particular. Page by page."
"You'll be sick for it," Toast warns.
"I'll write you books," Angharad says. "I'll write you 1,000 books if you come with us." Dag wants to laugh at the thought that she would ever stay, but she doesn't. She accepts Angharad's offer gravely and imagines her own name written on the first page. "For Dag, from Angharad." It's almost as good as photosynthesis. When they leave, Dag leaves all of her books behind. She'd been allowed one thing to take with her, a warm piece of their cold life in the vault. But she couldn't choose it, so she chooses nothing. She takes Cheeto's mirror instead, because Cheeto had already chosen to take her gloves, and because Dag likes catching the sun in the glass, and because she likes to make Cheeto smile. Flashing mirror messages is something close enough to words, like the dots on her fingers, like Angharad's scars, like Capable's braids. Patterns in a world of chaos. Things that make Dag's breathing slow, and her fingers stop trembling, and her teeth stop tearing at her lips. Things that make her feel less like a leaf caught on wind, a bone picked clean and left behind.
a burned book.
They go back to the Citadel when they've hit the edge of the world. They go back, and Dag doesn't go straight to her books. She has plants now, and Cheeto's hair warm in hers, and beads in her hair, and 1,000 people shouting for her. She thinks that maybe plants are like words, too, growing up curled and crooked. Angharad did not get to write her a book, but perhaps Dag will write her one instead, crossing out the stories she loves, covering them with the story of her and her sisters. For Angharad, love Dag, love Dag, love Dag. The end. Cheeto by Strychnine, read by Calicuria. Fandom, Mad Max Fury Road. Warning for rape. Cheeto knows that she is sometimes fragile. She knows too that it is not what Immortan Joe thinks it is. It is not a girl in love, and scared, and soft, and petty, how sometimes she is those things too. It is a girl who can be broken, and broken, and broken again, and she will come back, and come back, and come back again, just the same, but with scars to show. Angharad tells her that, sitting in the water, and Cheeto thinks that maybe she already knew it. Wretched children are born broken, after all. Well, you're not splendid either, she says, teasing, and Angharad flicks water at her face, and Cheeto licks it off her lips and smiles. Cheeto knows that the birds they see through the window, once in 1,000 days, are the only birds left in all the world. Everything has been burned, Miss Giddy tells them. Burned by bombs, and then wrung out by thirst. Cheeto decides that birds are fairies, just as rare as birds, and flying on feathered wings, and beautiful as the moon. Why can't they be fairies? She asks Dag, who reads stories to them all when it's dark. They can be fairies, says Dag. They steal girls away sometimes. Perhaps they'll steal you. Not if I can help it, says Angharad, folding her arms. Not if it's not all of us, says Cheeto, curling her hand around Toast's arm and tucking herself in closer. When they get to the swamp that used to be the green place, Cheeto is quietly enchanted by the crows that scream. They're only fairies, she wants to say. They've only stolen us all away, just like in the stories. But she keeps her mouth shut and tugs her wrap close and wonders who decided that dark and cold things were wicked. Cheeto knows that she is lucky. She is told so over and over again, so it must be true. She is told by the organic mechanic and by Miss Giddy and by Immortan Joe himself. She is a lucky, lucky, lucky girl. The luckiest girl there ever was, to be chosen for a wife. She hugs her knees when Joe visits her sisters, and she tells herself she is lucky, because it's easier to think of this as a miracle than to think of it as a curse. Her babies will not be wretched.
Our babies will not be warlords, Angharad corrects, sternly. The wretched have freedom.
The wretched have skin and bones, Cheeto mutters darkly. The wretched have their houses on their backs.
And what do we have? Angharad demands. But when she touches the brand on the back of Cheeto's neck,
her fingers are cold and gentle. Cheeto knows that she is lucky because she is not alone. Cheeto knows how to make Toast laugh. It's a small thing,
to creep a smile from her sister's mouth, but it is something that swells Cheeto up with pride. She will say something sullen and stuck in mud and bitter at the edges, and only Toast will see the humor there. Angrad and Capable try to soothe her, and even Dag frowns like she isn't sure what creature this is, but it isn't Cheeto, and Toast laughs, and Cheeto loves her for it.
"You're a brat,"
Toast says, ruffling her hair. "I know," says Cheeto, grinning back. When they meet the Vovellini, Cheeto looks at their bikes, bristling with feathers and twine, and she knows that one day soon she will be riding one. Across the salt in some unknown world, she'll make one of them teach her how to be like them. The Valkyrie, probably, because she looks fierce and gentle, and because her bike is bright with the feathers of fairies. They will ride together across the flat ground, their shoulders squared to the wind, and their eyes burning with speed. When Valkyrie is run down, this doesn't change. Cheeto knows that they will salvage what they can from the Fury Road, when the dust is settled, and she will claim the feathered bike back from the dad, and she will teach herself until her hands are thick with blisters and her cheeks are chapped with wind, and Valkyrie will ride with her. When Cheeto runs, she knows that her sisters will stop her. She is scared, and she is angry, and her heart is broken, and she needs to know that Angharad's words have not died with her. So she runs, and her sisters run after her, and Angharad is there, in all of them, in Furiosa with her finger on a trigger, and Capable flashing her eyes, and in Dag with fluttering hands, and in Toast who watches, steady as the earth, and in Cheeto herself, angry and defiant and more terrified than she has ever been. She runs so she can feel Angharad again, just for a moment, and then she goes back, with her sisters all around her. Cheeto knows that she is the only person who can save Furiosa, because Dag is wrapped in grief and blood and green, because Capable is wrapped in Angharad still, and in the war boy at the wheel, because Toast is taken, and too desperate and hurt to move, because Max is too far away, looking like the world is falling down around his ears and he can only watch. So it's Cheeto, stripping off her Vivellini symbols, becoming a wife again. Rictus will hold her like a feather and she will be fragile. She will be the soft girl, the pretty girl, the girl in love and terrified. She will tremble under his hands, and he will pass her along, and she will be steady as a rock holding out her hand to Furiosa. She shrugs off her vest, and she stands up. In the Citadel, Dag tells stories. "There once was a girl named Fragile," she says, dancing her fingers through the air. "There was a girl named Fragile who had never told a lie." "Stop it," says Cheeto, tugging Dag's hand from the sky and folding them up in hers. "You sound like him." For a moment, Dag looks like she might snap her fingers in half, or bite off her head, or scratch out her eyes. But Cheeto frowns, and Dag wilts just a little, and her hands soften, and all is well. There are sharp things in Dag behind her sky-colored eyes, but Cheeto knows how to gentle them. "He's dead," says Dag, her hands drifting over her pregnant belly. "He's dead and gone." "I know," says Cheeto, and she smiles. The end.